This episode is sponsored by Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast, and Ashley and I can definitely personally vouch for this. First of all, it saves you a bunch of time, so we don't really talk about this, but Ashley and I both have full-time jobs, and we don't really live close by each other, so we just get together once a week, every week, and talk about our podcast, and Anchor.fm helps us a lot to get everything out there and ready to go for you all to listen to with not a lot of time needed. So first of all, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. There are also creation tools right in Anchor that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or from your computer.
Also, Anchor is free, and even though you don't have to pay any money, it actually allows you to make money from your own podcast even without a minimum number of listeners. It's everything you could possibly need to make a podcast for free in one place.
So if you can't already tell, we both love Anchor. And if you're interested in starting a podcast of your own, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hi, listeners, and welcome to Above the Wing, a podcast to bring together all aspects of the aviation community, including engineers, journalists, mechanics, pilots, and even casual hobbyists. I'm your co-host, Kim.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley. We'll talk about all things aviation, from current events to new products and airplanes to industry trends and everything in between. Looking at our first news article this week, the Department of Transportation's one of their new reports found that American Airlines recently flew unairworthy aircraft. Among the issues documented in their report was that a jet flew passengers for a total of 877 days with a broken emergency evacuation slide. There's another instance where a jet flew for over 1,000 hours with missing engine bushings and improperly installed struts holding the engines in place. The report found that, quote, FAA inspectors did not routinely or consistently evaluate whether the carrier adequately and effectively assessed and rated risks. This was in part because the FAA did not provide its inspectors with comprehensive training and tools for overseeing and evaluating the carrier's safety management system. The report also found that there were times when FAA inspectors prematurely closed out compliance actions before ensuring that the carrier actually completed them. So I thought this was an interesting sort of oversight issue that you hope to not really have to think about when you're flying on an airline, but I guess it's good that it got caught.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I was just about to say the same thing. I'm glad that there's a report on it and they found it, but I'm not glad that it happened in the first place.
Yeah, seriously.
So moving on to our next headline, it's more American Airlines news. A passenger is charged with assaulting an American Airlines flight attendant. During a flight from New York to Santa Ana, California, the flight had to make an unscheduled landing in Denver, Colorado. This unscheduled landing was due to what witnesses say was a conflict between a flight attendant and a passenger. They say that a flight attendant was punched in the nose, resulting in bleeding and a concussion. The suspect was charged with interference with a flight crew, and this is amidst a record number of violent incidents in the past year. And because of this, the FAA pledged, quote, a zero-tolerance approach. Through October 25th, 2021, there have been 4,941 reports of unruly passenger incidents, and 3,580 of which were related to pandemic face covering regulations. So again, I'm not glad that this is happening, but I am glad that the FAA is pledging a zero tolerance approach. And hopefully the issue of unruly passengers is solved very quickly and very soon.
Yeah, that had to have been a scary flight. I can't even imagine being on it.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree.
Looking into some of the effects of these vaccination mandates that have come out of some airlines, United Airlines is reporting that unvaccinated pilots are causing their company millions of dollars. United Airlines told a federal judge that the company is spending millions on paid leave for unvaccinated pilots because their colleagues, quote, refuse to risk their safety by flying with them. The leave has costed United Airlines about $1.4 million every 2 weeks. And while the cost cited in the filing is relatively small for a company of United's size, the airline industry is still struggling on top of that with aftermath of the pandemic that, of course, took away a lot of their sales starting in 2020. The company recently announced that they are seeing a loss of more than $7 billion last year as air traffic really just halted. So it's interesting to see how the mandates and stuff are affecting airlines financially.
Yeah, for sure. And this coupled with the pilot shortage is definitely not a good combination. I have a friend who flew recently and their flight was just straight up canceled. They didn't reschedule the flight or anything because they just weren't enough pilots. And like what Stefan said in our episode with him, there's kind of a lead time because you need to train the pilots before they can actually start flying. So right. I really, really hope that this gets resolved soon and hopefully there will be less and less delays as time goes on and cancellations.
Hopefully.
All right, and moving on to our last headline, we're kind of switching gears into sustainable aviation. A company called ZeroAvia seeks airline for first commercial hydrogen flight. ZeroAvia is a propulsion system developer based in the Netherlands. They're working to develop a 600 kilowatt hydrogen fuel cell based powertrain that could apply to multiple 19-seater aircraft. The company plans to flight test as part of the High Flyer 2 program, spelled HY like Hydrogen Flyer 2, using one of two Domier 228 aircrafts. The UK-based regional carrier Arrigny Air, apologies for my pronunciation, has provided one of the test aircraft. The High Flyer 2 program's goal is to support a range of up to 500 miles, and this comes after the High Flyer 1 program, where ZeroAvia achieved cruise flight fueled entirely by hydrogen electric power, with batteries used only for supplementary power during takeoff, and they flew their flight test using a six-seat Piper Malibu aircraft for the High Flyer 1 program. So this is super exciting to me. I love hearing about companies that are coming up with new sustainable propulsion methods.
Yeah, this is awesome. Definitely seems like it's a step in the right direction.
Now, moving on from our new segment, we'll transition into the bulk of our episode, where we'll be focusing on the Boeing 737 MAX incident. It was a very long ordeal, and Ashley and I both didn't really pay much attention to it, or as much attention as we would have liked while this whole incident was occurring. So we wanted to use this opportunity to look into the history of the 737 MAX. It was a pretty pivotal crisis in the aviation industry. It all started in 1967 when the original Boeing 737 generation had its first flight. The model plane was a 737-100, and there's a slightly longer version, the 737-200. In 1979, Boeing began major revamps of the 737. In the 1980s into the early 1990s, the 737 Classic Series debuts. In the early 1990s, Boeing begins developing the NG, or the next generation. This included airframe upgrades, wing redesigns, flight deck, and cabin improvements. But the NG kept enough important commonality that upgrading or operating mixed fleets, so mixed fleets refers to having both the both the Classic and the NG generation, will be easy and cost-effective. And this is a trend that they continue to follow, and I'll touch upon that later on. In the late 1990s into the early 2000s, the NGs enter into service, and many of these are still in service today in 2021, and they'll likely continue to be in service for years to come. Between the originals, Classics, NGs, and the NGs, the 737 has been one of the most best-selling commercial aircraft with more than 10,000 worldwide deliveries. So at this point in the early 2000s, Boeing has pretty much solidified itself as one of the leaders in aircraft manufacturers. So they were in a really, really, really comfortable place. But as I just summarized, they always had to be looking towards the next step. So they started with the classic generation, or they started with the original generation. Then they had the Classic Series, and then they had the NG Series. So this is where they kind of took their time and was kind of the start, I should say, of some uncertain waters for Boeing. So between 2006 and 2010, Boeing started thinking about what they should do as a successor for the 737NG. Some potential options for the successor consisted of replacing the 737 with a brand new airplane or simply replacing the engines on the 737NG. In December 2010, they started to get some heat. Airbus announced that they were going to create an A320neo family, where NEO stands for New Engine Option. By spring of 2011, American Airlines chief executive Gerard Arpey informs Boeing CEO, who was W. James McNerney Jr. at the time, of the airline's plans to close a deal for hundreds of Airbus narrow-body aircraft. Arpey pushed McNerney to be more aggressive and timely to win business in the industry, and until this point, AA had exclusively purchased from Boeing for more than 10 years, so this was a huge deal for Boeing. They had a really reliable and loyal airlines, just they were ready to just stop supporting Boeing and kind of jumping ship at this point. So this made Boeing pretty nervous, and they decided to just simply replace the engines on the 737 to create the successor to the NG family. They decided to do this because designing a whole new aircraft would take too long, potentially up to 10 years. And that is way too long to wait, considering the fact that Airbus already had their A320neo family up and running, and companies were already placing orders. By July 2011, American Airlines announces their order for 130 A320ceos, 120 A320neos, with an option for 365 more. American Airlines also announces the order for 100 of Boeing's still-yet-to-come NG successor. And I was pretty shocked that they did this. They were just like, oh, we'll maintain some loyalty and order 100 of your aircraft that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, that is pretty surprising, actually.
And, you know, that was risky for sure, but I'm sure they wanted to maintain good relationships.
Definitely.
So continuing more about the 737's history, in August 2011, Boeing finally announces the 737 MAX. There'll be three different models, the MAX 7, the MAX 8, and the MAX 9. So the benefits of this new 737 MAX just boiled down to time. And this is important. This shortcut essentially led to the crashes. So in order to maintain this benefit of time, they retain lots of commonality between the MAX and the NG, which is the same thing that they did with their previous models. This commonality allowed pilots and ground staff to not have to be recertified on a new aircraft type. So, for example, pilots would only have to take a tablet-based course rather than training in a simulator, which would be necessary for a new aircraft type. So in terms of training people to fly this aircraft, it was going to be a lot simpler, a lot cheaper, and a lot faster. In addition to the people involved with flying, Boeing itself would not have to undergo a lengthy certification process because of the commonalities between the MAX and its previous generations. The airframe, so the body and the wing, stayed the same as the predecessors, so only the engines and the avionics changed. So that cut Boeing a lot of time in terms of the certification process. However, the one change that Boeing made was the engines on the MAX. So the engines were larger, positioned further upward, higher up on the wing than compared to the 737NG. And this change in positioning of the engines caused a lot of different behaviors when you compared the MAX to the 737NG. Some potential differences was that on the 737 MAX, the nose of the plane could pitch upwards in low-speed flight. And this could also result in flight with a high angle of attack. And this is especially prevalent when the plane is being flown manually. So Boeing, to compensate for the change in engine position, they designed something called the Maneuvering Control Augmentation Software, or MCAS, to automatically stabilize pitch and nudge the nose back down to match other 737 generations' pitch in flight. So again, this allowed the 737 MAX to share the same type of rating as the previous generation, the 737NG. But there was a little bit of discrepancy here, and this discrepancy was not clearly articulated in the training manuals. So this resulted in the two accidents that, Ashley, you can go into next.
Yeah, so, you know, focusing a little more on what exactly happened in those two crashes. The first one happened October 29th of 2018. It was Lion Air 610, and it crashed into the Java Sea 13 minutes after takeoff from Indonesia, and it killed 189 people. The reports have found that the flight crew made a distress call shortly before the aircraft lost control. And this aircraft was almost brand new. It had arrived to the Lion Air company 3 months earlier. Looking at the second crash on March 10th of 2019, Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 departed Addis Ababa Bole International Airport. Shortly after takeoff, the pilot radioed a distress call and was given immediate clearance to return back to the airport that he took off from. Before the crew could make it back, though, the aircraft crashed 40 miles from the airport just 6 minutes after it left the runway. Aboard this flight were 149 passengers and 8 crew members, and this aircraft also very young, only 4 months old. So looking into a little more of why these two airplanes crashed, you know, ultimately a lot of it does boil down to, like Kim was mentioning before, that MCAS system. So the Indonesian National Transport Safety Committee's report on that first Lion Air crash found that there were a total of 9 factors that contributed to the crash, but it really mostly blamed MCAS. Just before crashing, the Lion Air pilots were unable to determine their true airspeed and altitude, and they struggled to take control of the plane as it oscillated for about 10 minutes, which is very scary to think about. Each time they pulled up from a dive, MCAS would just push the nose right back down again. Ethiopia's Aircraft Accident Investigation Bureau also cited some design flaws with MCAS, such as its reliance on a single angle of attack sensor. They also went on to blame Boeing for providing inadequate training to crew, like Kim mentioned, on the MAX's unique systems. The Air Current, which is an online aviation news organization, reported that the Lion airplane also lacked a warning light that was designed to alert pilots to the faulty sensor. Boeing sold this light as part of an optional package of equipment, so it did not come standard. Though the Wall Street Journal later reported that even for airlines who had ordered it, the warning light wasn't operating correctly on some MAX planes that had been delivered and had it installed. And then looking a little more into that training, this, of course, was a factor that was cited in both crash reports. Though MCAS was a new feature, pilots who were already trained on 737s did not have to train in a simulator before they stepped into flying the MAX. Instead, they just learned about the differences in 1 hour's worth of iPad training. This was pushed by Boeing in an attempt to minimize the cost and time of certifying pilots who, of course, were already trained on other 737 versions.
And what's crazy to me, too, is that between the Ethiopia crash and the Lion Air crash, Boeing was still flying their planes.
Yeah,
they were still making deliveries and things like that because they were playing catch up. They really wanted to maintain that competitive edge against Airbus. And that was really scary to think about. I mean, I don't think I flew in this time frame, like 2018 and 2019. But the chances that I could have flown on a 737 MAX is very high because they, like I said, they kept making deliveries and people kept flying the planes. And of course, like they had a really, Boeing had a very good reputation prior to this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like American Airlines was so committed. They had only bought Boeing aircraft for 10 plus years. So it was almost surreal that such a large and seemingly reputable aircraft company would result in such a large accident.
It was interesting when I was doing my research before this, I came across an article that was, the focus of it was something along the lines of, how do I know, it was just for like, you know, the common person, it was, how do I know the flight that I'm about to take will be a 737 MAX or not, and how do I change it?
Oh my gosh.
They really just ruined their reputation in a lot of ways with this one.
What's funny too is like when I started working in the aerospace industry, my parents would be like, oh, like can you take a look at this aircraft that I'm flying? Like, is it safe? I would be like, I don't know. Is it Airbus or Boeing? And if it was Airbus, then it was fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is lots. It is kind of sad. Like, it's kind of regrettable that I do say that, because I don't want, like, Boeing to keep this reputation. And, like, I do wish them the best and hope they can, you know, learn from this mistake and prevent something like this from happening again. But still, it's scary, and this industry is very high stakes. Not to mention, I think it's crazy that the FAA allowed this to happen too. Like, I wonder what happened behind closed doors to get the FAA to certify this new system, the MCAS system. I mean, like I said, Boeing really tried to keep a lot of the things the same so that they could save some money and time on certifying their pilots and staff and everything like that. But this was the glaringly obvious difference, and it is a big difference, and it kind of needs to be like quadruple checked for something like this, because directing the pitch of the plane is a big deal. And if it does it wrong, clearly we know what will happen, and all the sadness and grief that it can cause.
Yeah. So speaking of the FAA, the, you know, mandatory grounding of this fleet has since been lifted. 2 years after it was banned from flying passengers, the Boeing 737 MAX has been cleared to return to skies in most parts of the world. Aviation safety agencies in the United States, Brazil, Canada, Australia, the UK, and European Union, amongst some other places, have ordered Boeing and airplanes to make repairs to a flight control system blamed for those two crashes. China, though, is still prohibiting the plane from flying, which is sort of interesting, and they have not yet indicated when they will allow them to take flight again. Though here in the United States, the plane is back in service. Looking at what the FAA, required some mandatory fixes when they lifted the grounding order, they required that MCAS must compare data from more than one sensor and avoid relying on just one single angle of attack sensor. They've now required all these aircraft to have a warning light that shows when two sensors are disagreeing. When the MCAS is activated, it must do so only once rather than activating repeatedly. And if the MCAS is erroneously activated, flight crews must be able to counter the movement by pulling back on the controls. And to top it all off, pilots must get some more rigorous training on the MCAS, including time in a MAX simulator. So it looks like they got a little bit of a slap on their wrist from the FAA and some things to go back and work on. But, they're flying in a lot of parts of the world again. So hopefully they've sort of learned their lesson there.
Yeah, true. And other than a slap on the wrist in the FAA, they also lost a ton of money and the reputation that we were talking about earlier. They lost a lot of that. So after this whole ordeal, Boeing lost the title of the world's biggest airplane maker to Airbus. This resulted in the company posted its first full year loss in more than 20 years. Wow. The shares slid, which was obvious. And the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said that all the 737 MAX groundings could shave off half a point from the entire U.S. country's GDP in 2020.
Wow.
So this was catastrophic.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think this is just like a lesson to everyone in the industry that you really got to take this seriously. Like, no shortcuts, no nothing. And, you know, this is, like I said earlier, it's high stakes.
Yeah, it's tough when you see that a market is so competitive. You know, we like to say that competition is healthy and good, but not when you see instances like this where people are taking shortcuts just to try and, you know, get first.
Yeah, and I do wonder what would have happened if they didn't take these shortcuts. Like, I'm sure Boeing is more than capable of creating a really awesome aircraft.
Yeah.
That was technically sound and everything if they had taken the time. And I wonder if they had done that, I wonder if they would have overtaken Airbus as the best or the largest airplane manufacturer. But I guess there's no way of knowing.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, and there's a lot of regret too for that I've seen anyway. There were investigations done on internal Boeing emails and messages, and prior to the incident, they uncovered a lot of interesting attitudes toward the FAA. Where it was like, yeah, it was like a systematic problem. Like they like mock the FAA rules. They like didn't really take it seriously. Like, you know, they covered stuff up because they like didn't think the FAA was like legit and stuff like that. And then like now they got themselves into this situation, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't have written it any worse.
I know, seriously. And this was all in like the company emails and stuff. So it was all on record. I don't know right. what they were thinking.
Like, no one likes the FAA, but you don't write this stuff on your company
email. I know. Nor just because you don't like the FAA, that's definitely not a good enough reason to cover up like your company's lapse in safety and stuff.
Yeah.
But there is this one quote, which I think is just so bad. An employee wrote in an instant message, "This airplane is designed by clowns who in turn are supervised by monkeys."
Jesus.
So definitely a really, That's really awful. Bad culture. And
yeah, not a good look.
It sucks that it had to get this bad for them to realize that, you know, you can't be doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So that is that. And the 737 MAX, you know, has made its return. The chief technical officer was indicted recently, as we touched upon, and I think it was 2 episodes ago. If anything, this whole thing has wrapped up finally, and all the lawsuits are finally done. So hopefully people have learned their lesson, and we don't have another issue like this again.
Hopefully. Now transitioning into our featured photo segment, and remember you can go see the photos that me and Kim are going to talk through on our Instagram at abovethewing.podcast. Kim, do you want to walk us through your photo?
Sure. So the first photo that I picked out this week was wreckage from the Transair 737 being pulled from the ocean floor. I just thought this was a crazy photo. So it's a cargo ship basically lifting the back half of a Boeing 737 out of the ocean. Just for some background, this was a cargo flight that crashed recently on July 2nd, 2021. And there's the article that I pulled this from details all the intricacies of getting that ship to that specific area of the ocean. And obviously the plane isn't in one piece. So it was a lot of weird geometries that they kind of had to work around and had to grip around to pull it out of the ocean. But I'm glad that they found the wreckage, and hopefully this answers some questions about why this crash happened in the first place and they can prevent something like this from happening again in the future.
Photos like this are always really crazy. You can see like a guy standing like at the end of the ship, and he just looks so small compared to like just the half of the, you know, of the body of the airplane that they pulled out. It's really crazy to try and like wrap your mind around.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a very good perspective / reality check on how large these planes really are.
Yeah, seriously. So my photo is a Stuart S-51 Mustang, and it's an all aluminum kit built aircraft, which is sort of cool. And it's an EAB version of the, you know, the popular P-51. Designed to a 70% scale. So I always think that kit-built airplanes are pretty cool. And this one's got sort of a fun color scheme on it. And I just think like air-to-air photos are always fun to look at. So I thought this was a cool photo.
Yeah, it definitely is. Would you ever build and fly your own kit aircraft, Ashley?
I think I would. I'm part of an EAA chapter and we're building an RV-12. So, you know, that's obviously the build completion date is quite some years away, but like for sure, why not? You know, it's a pretty cool thing to say that you did or were part of.
I think I would definitely build a kit, but I don't think I would fly it.
Definitely lots of risk, but high reward there. So,
oh, definitely for sure. Well, that just about wraps it up for this week. So as always, thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. For more Above the Wing content, you can follow us on Instagram at abovethewing.podcast.
Thanks for listening.